Cap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And it is a throwback Thursday, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. Glad you could be with us. So Eli Manning is going to retire a New York Giant, and he's not going to be leaving and going to another team and playing the 1 or 2 years left on his career for somebody else. And I couldn't be happier. I think this is the absolute right decision for Eli Manning. To go to New York, to demand to go to New York, and to deliver two championships to that franchise, and to go down as the greatest New York Giant quarterback of all time in its storied history. To not leave for a year down in Jacksonville or somewhere else or wherever all the places that Eli had been linked to in the past. To just close out the year. To prove what? To do what? I think this is perfect and a perfect ending for Eli. He had the streak. It came to an end. He didn't have to worry about that anymore. He lost his job to Daniel Jones. He was the backup, and he was a good backup, and he didn't create any problems. When they needed him, he filled in, and then he gave it right back when the time was ready again. And now he gets to leave in the only uniform he's ever going to wear as a professional. And I don't blame people for trying to go back and staying in this league as long as they possibly can. I've said it time and time again that when you play a professional sport where your clock ticks in your late 30s and then you get told you can't do that anymore, you try to get as many of those years as you possibly can. If you do something cool for a living, whether it's build houses or whatever it is that you can do it until you're 60, 65, 70 years old, but you can only play professional sports up until a certain point. And then that's it. Then it's over. Then you find something else to do. You're either going to go into retirement, or you're going to go into broadcasting, or you're going to be a coach or whatever it is, but you're not going to play anymore. So if you want to cling on to that, I don't blame you. But in this case, just the image of Eli Manning starting as a Giant, ending as a Giant, and no one the uniform, and no other team, and no other year of just sort of, let's see what Eli's got in the old tank. There won't be any of that conversation. But there will be another conversation about Eli Manning now that he is going to retire, and then what do we do about Ken? That's next.
In 1972, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
A lot of times we do Throwback Thursday where we find a sporting event, a sports moment. But this one is a television moment. This show debuted in 1983, and it was one of my favorite shows as a young kid. Despite all the machine guns that would just riddle the city of Los Angeles. You can't do that show today, can you?
Sure you
can. You're just firing automatic weapons just randomly in different Los Angeles areas.
Hey, it's called collateral damage, Tony.
What a show this was. Mr. T, George Peppard, Dirk Benedict. He played Face. And it was so funny because I didn't realize until a comedian pointed this out later that this was an underground unit trying to hide from the government, driving around a van that didn't look like any other van on the road. And a lot of people just could find them. Just go, I got a problem. Let's find the A-Team. Apparently The government couldn't find them.
Never but could.
Random people that had trouble with whatever they were having trouble with could just simply find the A-Team. And George Peppard was in disguise all the time. Remember that? That's how you kind of got to him. And then B.A. Baracus, Mr. T., he didn't want to fly.
Probably the most recognizable person on the face of the planet.
Oh, God, it was great.
Find him.
Couldn't find him.
Yeah, you know,
he's wearing gold chains, and people were like, I don't know where he is.
Blue,
I don't know where the A team is.
Gigantic blue overalls.
And the mohawk.
You know, truthfully, you probably couldn't make this show today because everybody like, well, you know, modern technology, face recognition.
Oh, of course. The A team would be caught in 3 seconds.
Yeah.
It's just one lone phone video of the A team solving a crime would throw them right in prison.
And if that, you know, say they're just. You know, because they weren't always on a mission. Say they were just driving through a drive-thru, right?
Right.
A cop would have had a bead on these guys, right?
Sure.
They would have known to look out for a black van with a red stripe and a big old spoiler on the back.
Exactly. Let's find the A-team. Well, what do we know they're driving? A black van with a red stripe. Oh, that's going to be impossible to find.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll never find that. Never. Put out an APB. Don't even bother. You'll never find that van. Never. It's just one of billions of vans that look just like it. You'll be stopping everybody in Los Angeles.
The other, every once in a while, too, the roof pops open or
right.
the you know, something protrudes from the side of it, like a big old rocket launcher.
Exactly. And are they in Montana? Are they in Florida? No, they're only in Southern California. So that's even more impossible. We're never going to find them. What a fun show.
They had a few shows up in NorCal, didn't they?
I think
maybe
they did.
Maybe out in the desert towards Vegas.
What a show. What a fun show that was. I loved it. You know, it was part of an early 80s television era where there was a lot of these kind of shows like Knight Rider and stuff where it was just there was this issue. It needed to be resolved. It was resolved quickly with some humor, with some lightheartedness. You know, no one was ever in real trouble or real danger or dying or anything. Like I said, they shot guns, but nobody ever died. It was just fun. It was just a fun TV show. It's great. Like, there was all these serious shows for, like, my parents. Like, they watched Dallas and Falcon Crest and Dynasty and Knott's Landing and shows like that. Me, as a kid, I watched Knight Rider, A-Team, and a couple of others
like that.
Dukes of Hazzard, right.
I guess
a couple
you know
of other these
is?
Shows that were just fun
you know,
to watch.
You know what we needed? We needed a good fast car.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was. Some sort of vehicle that attracted us.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird though when you grow up at that time. I remember I had a friend whose father was a police officer. He couldn't watch Dukes of Hazzard because they just made fun of the cops.
Of course they did.
All the time. Every episode was them just making fun of Enos and Roscoe P. Coltrane and Boss Hogg. Making fun of the police.
Did you try to explain to them that, no, they're not making fun of you. They're making fun of country cops.
That's right. They're making fun of Georgia cops or country cops or wherever the heck that show was filmed. They weren't making fun of New Hampshire cops. Like, New Hampshire cops are good.
All right. I mean, speaking on that,
New Hampshire cops caught Bernard Goetz. Remember the subway vigilante?
Yes.
Hey, they caught him in New Hampshire. I was like, they're not making fun of your dad. They're making fun of the middle of nowhere cops.
Now, could they make the Dukes of Hazzard today, given the general lead?
No chance.
Not politically correct.
No chance. No way is that show getting remade. None. But A-Team, it would be an interesting twist if you had a television writer sit down and try to find a way to make the A-Team work, right? Make them very inconspicuous.
Honestly, it would probably be a hit.
I think it could.
Think about, I mean, you know, just an action-packed show, something like that. That would be a big hit today.
Yeah, really take it, like, really look at the technology and go, how could they avoid, like you said, face recognition software.
Satellite
cameras.
It's TV, so you just ignore that part, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly. So that's Throwback Thursday, and we're going to go back to 1983 throughout the show today. So Eli Manning announcing his retirement, 16 years. I said at the top of the show, I think it's great. I'm glad he's not going to be on. I'm glad he's not going to be in some other uniform at somewhere else for 1 year or 2 years. I think even the rest of the NFL, even if you needed a quarterback, he still wouldn't really be your guy, right? I mean, you'd still be like, look, we need a quarterback, but we need to find somebody young. We need to find somebody we can groom. Maybe we'll take a chance like the Titans did on a young guy that's looking to restart his career, like Marcus Mariota, for example, rather than kind of dip into a guy that's 38 years old, just going to play out a year or two just to say he did. I think when Eli sat down, realized, look, I have a chance to do
what Derek Jeter's doing, right? He is now he's Yankee personified. He was a Yankee through and through. He's going to the Hall of Fame as a Yankee. I think Eli said, I'm a Giant. I'm always going to be a Giant. There'll never be another picture of me floating around wearing another uniform like Joe Namath with the Rams or Johnny Unitas with the Chargers or anything else. I will be a Giant forever. He is the greatest Giants quarterback of all time. He's the greatest Giants quarterback of all time. He's not their best player. I think that's Lawrence Taylor, but he's,
oh, of course,
but he's the best quarterback they've ever had.
Would Belichick? I mean, I know Belichick has a love affair with Lawrence Taylor, but he might sit there and go, Eli Manning's pretty good.
Yeah.
Given the fact that he could never beat him.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. And I know, look, he's not a surefire Hall of Famer. His legacy and his career is going to be debated. And you'll be seeing this up until induction time for Eli over the next few years. Of his merits, right? His the good things that he's done, the two Super Bowl championships, the big stage moments that he won on the road in the NFC title game, beating the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau Field, winning a game against San Francisco. He shined in those big moments for the Giants. He went 8-4 in the playoffs in his career. That's a fantastic record. But he has a .500 record during the regular season. Right, I mean, there's going to be a lot of back and forth. I think Manning is a Hall of Famer. If I had a vote, I would vote for him. I would vote for him because of the championships. I think part of the history of America, of the NFL, is Eli Manning beating the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl and beating them twice, but beating them in that one important time where he stopped the perfect season. I think playing for New York and the way the spotlight is just on you a little bit more when you play for the Giants, he delivered what you were supposed to deliver as a quarterback. When you get drafted and you get drafted high and you are the franchise quarterback, you're supposed to deliver the goods, and that's titles. He delivered the titles. He gave New York two championships. And as I said many, many times, if you have a chance in your lifetime to see your team win 3, 4, 5 Super Bowls, it's probably what you're going to get. And if one quarterback can deliver two of those to you, and you take it, right? There's no New York Giant fan is thinking it should have been more. Two is good. Two is, for a 16-year career, two is good. These are hard to do, right? That's why we say the Patriots are spoiled, because it's not, you can't win 6 or 7. Right? It's hard to do that over a period of time.
No, I mean, you look at some of the quarterbacks who only have one.
Right. Sure.
Favre.
Yeah, Brett Favre got one.
Favre has a ton of records. Drew Brees probably will only get one. Aaron Rodgers may only get one.
That's it. So Eli Manning got two. I mean, look, the regular season records are no good. And you know what? For Eli, and the way he closed out his career wasn't that great. And I think one of the main arguments against his candidacy is that a Hall of Fame quarterback should always be putting you in position to make the playoffs. Always, right? Even if you fail a little short, right? Even if you go 9-7, but some of his Giants teams were done early. They were not good. They were bad football teams, and he was the quarterback. And he didn't account for, or he didn't take a bad team and elevate it just enough so that, yeah, they're not 12-4, but you know what? They're struggling at the end to try to make it. No, some of his teams were bad, really, really bad, and he didn't play well on them. But I think when you're a Manning and you come from the football royalty, you'll hear that a lot in the next few years. Football royalty, well, they've been saying it pretty much since he got in the league, right? When you're part of that family, when you win titles, when you kind of do what you were supposed to do, you're going to the Hall of Fame. It's very difficult to keep somebody who's won two Super Bowls in New York out, but it's also going to be two guy who won two Super Bowls in New York whose last name is Manning. It's going to be hard. I'd be very shocked if he is not in the Hall of Fame. But there are legitimate arguments against his candidacy. This is not Peyton Manning walking in. This is Eli Manning walking in with some baggage, with some things to go against. But in my book, he's a Hall of Famer. I would vote for him the first time, every time that I had an opportunity to, if I voted. I think what he did, and here's the other thing. He's beloved. That's the other thing. He's beloved. I'm sure there are a lot of Giants, you can't have a 16-year relationship with a player and not have your ups and downs with that player. There are very few where it's just constantly awesome all the time, right? You're going to have moments where that player failed in a particular, particular time. Eli Manning failed in a number of issues where Giant fans were very frustrated, but as a whole, He's beloved. He's just absolutely loved by Giant fans. He is Mr. Giant.
If he is blessed to get into Canton, on his plaque, do you put Patriot Killer?
That would be fun if you did that. Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Really the only one.
And I think there really is a place where, the Giants would have taken those Super Bowls against anybody, okay? No problem. But the idea that a Giant fan can walk around going, they had a perfect record and they didn't have a perfect record once they met Eli. And then they played him again and they couldn't get the revenge. It was all that talk into the second Super Bowl about getting revenge for destroying the perfect season. And they couldn't do it either. And that's important. I mean, that's a lot of bragging rights. So, yeah, you'll hear the arguments. The cases are against the 500 career record, but not counting the 8-4 in the playoffs. And I think that's big. All right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue along on a Throwback Thursday. Coming up next, the big debut. How did it go for Zion Williamson? Next on SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Because you don't drive Kit. If you drove Kit, you probably wouldn't need O'Reilly Auto Parts, because he had his own personal truck that he went into to get fixed.
No, actually, You wouldn't drive to O'Reilly. Kit would.
Kit would drive to O'Reilly.
Kit
needed something at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You could just tell Kit, take me to O'Reilly Auto Parts. And you go, okay, Michael. And then he would drive you. And you'd be like, my name's not Michael. He's like, well, it's the only name I know. And then he would just drive off to O'Reilly Auto Parts. We need new windshield wipers, Kit. We need a new battery.
You wouldn't be able to tell Kit that. Kit would tell you, hey, we got to make a quick pit stop.
Michael,
I know you're on a case.
I need a new right front tire.
We need to stop at O'Reilly first.
That's right. How cool was it he had a talking car? God, it's great.
It wasn't for me so much about a talking car, because that might get annoying after a while, but a self-driving car that you could trust.
Totally trust. He could take you anywhere you wanted to go.
Yep.
You just say, and then he had turbo boost. Remember that?
Yes.
He had that one button. See, that was the one thing that always got me, though. Why couldn't Kit just do turbo boost whenever you needed it? Just anticipated that.
Kit would be out of breath.
He'd like, punch it, Kit! He'd push the button, and off he went, fighting the bad guy. You ever watch them today?
Of course.
You see them today? They're so, they're really cheesy.
Oh, extremely.
as an adult, you're like, when you see them in adult eyes, you're like, I never understood why, I loved that show so much, and I never understood, why my dad didn't, be all into it and stuff. And now I know. It was kind of written for me.
He looks at it and goes, I mean, as a parent, you're looking at you know what? That could never happen. It, it blends that line between, cool cop drama type show.
That's right.
With fantasy.
See, I'm like a little kid, and I'm watching that, and I'm like, yeah, when I get to be an adult, I'm going to have a talking car, and you're going to be an old man who doesn't get one. Ha, ha, ha. Here I am, an old man, and I don't get the talking car.
I remember my aunt. This had to be like mid-80s. She had a car that would talk to her.
Oh, how great is that?
But it would repeat the same things, windshield wipers on. That would be all it would say. But it was because you physically turned the windshield wipers on.
I remember, about 10 years ago, they were selling a GPS unit that had Kit's voice.
Ooh.
And I really was going to get one. Really wanted one.
Why can't you get that in an app? You can get that
you
in an
should.
App, right?
You should.
How great would that be?
I know. The guy, who was the voice of Kit again? God, I've got to look it up. But he was on St. Elsewhere, that TV show. And, why couldn't you get one? That was another one of those shows where there was a crime. Here's Michael Knight, mystery man with the talking car. Boom, he'd solve it, and that was it. Just in 1 hour. Very simple. Very simple crimes. So Zion Williamson made his debut last night for the New Orleans Pelicans. And what a debut it was. Now, Pelicans were interesting because they had said all the right things leading up to the game last night. Said, look, guy's coming back from knee injury. It's going to be limited in his minutes. We're not going to go crazy. Alvin Gentry even said it. He's like, look, I don't expect him to be great. I don't expect him to be bad. I don't expect anything. I just want him to play. I just want him to get up to game speed. There's no expectations here. I don't know what he's going to do when he gets out there. And you know what? I don't care. I want him to just start getting some, you know, minutes and getting some time and learning the game speed. They played 18 minutes, so it was limited, but boy, what a performance last night. Here's a couple of highlights from the Pelican Spurs game.
Here is Zion stepping back, pulling the trigger, and hitting a three. Here's a lob to Zion, and he finishes over DeRozan. Five straight for the rookie. They want Zion to get it. Here he is. And Pirtle blocked it. Zion gets it back and finishes. 10 points in just over a minute for Zion Williamson. Zion gives it up. Gets it back. Here he is again. Got it again! Gets it back. Zion for four for four!
So there you have it, Zion Williamson. He had 22 points. He had 17 of those came in the fourth quarter. It was 17 straight points. He also had 7 rebounds in 18 minutes of work. He looked very rusty in the beginning, but you would expect that. Yep. He's coming off a knee injury, and you know it's his first NBA regular season game.
Got probably some nerves.
Yeah, some nerves. You know, kind of mishandled the ball a few times and kind of deferred.
Maybe.
Then they told him, they said, shoot. Drew Holiday said, I told him to shoot. And he started shooting in the fourth quarter.
I was thinking maybe at the beginning he was a little nervous about his shoes.
Sure. Why? Yeah, that's right. Why not?
You just don't know.
You don't know. When you make that plant, you have no idea if your shoe is going to explode.
That was a good debut.
That was a good debut.
I mean, the only thing missing was probably the W.
That's right. And that's what he said afterwards. He goes, it was everything I thought except for losing. All right. But it was good. It was good. A good fourth quarter, especially. And if you were at the game in New Orleans, that, you know, all right, so they lost. But you'll remember an exciting debut for Zion Williamson.
I think New Orleans fans, Pelican fans, were walking away happy.
Yeah, excited. I think so, too. Yeah,
I don't think anyone was bummed about the loss.
Yeah, because if he had played the 18 minutes and was like, I don't know, two of 12,
yeah,
you know, 6 points.
Like, oh, God.
Like, nah, I'm okay. Well, this is going to be a while before he gets, you know. 17 straight points, 4 three-pointers for the big man.
4 for 4.
4 for 4, that's right.
Let's not forget
great
that.
Point.
Let's put that on there.
Great point. Great point. With a bunch of young guys like Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Drew Holiday. I mean, was that the Pelicans Radio Network? I want to give that credit.
Yes.
That was on there. All right. Pelicans Radio Network. The announcer is already calling him Zion. That's it. Not Williamson. He didn't say Williamson got the ball. Williamson at the top of the key. Williamson for three. He's using first name, yep. Baby. Already first name. And listen, if I was a play-by-play guy for any other team, that's what I'd use. That's how I'd go.
Okay,
if I was the voice of the Nuggets or something and I played the Pelicans, I'd call him Zion, too. I wouldn't say Williamson. Williamson's a nice last name, that's it. But Zion, that's his moniker.
You trip on Williamson, though. That's a lengthy last name.
It is.
Zion, I mean, he's going to be known for Zion just like Kobe's going to be known for Kobe.
That's it, Zion.
When you just say Kobe, you know exactly who we're talking about.
Same thing with LeBron.
LeBron,
Kobe, Shaq.
Yep.
Right? There's a number of them, first name basis. Right? Zion it is. But a good debut. Good fun debut.
Love the fact that the fans were already chanting MVP.
Yeah, already. That's great. That's the kind of fun. You pay for the ticket, you go for the ride, right?
That's what I'm saying. They all walked away. I mean, even though the loss, they won't remember the score this morning. When they're sitting around the water cooler, they're not going to be talking about the score. Somebody asked them what the score was. They go, I don't know, but Zion, that fourth quarter was amazing.
He's missed, let's see here, the Pelicans are 7, I'm going to have to do really quick math here. So they're 17 and 28, which means they were 17 and 70 and 27, 44 games. All right, so he missed 44 games. If he explodes for the next 30-something, he'll be in the running for Rookie of the Year. I don't think he'd win it. Ja Morant will probably win it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to take a look at some other statistics.
Well, Ja Morant's already outjumped him.
But my God, what a debut. If he starts pouring in some... some double-doubles and some three-pointers and knocking them down. You know, hey, look out. That was a nice debut for Zion. Good job. And everything people thought he was going to be, he was in that fourth quarter. That is absolutely fantastic. Zion Williamson. But coming up next, Major League Baseball is doing something in spring training I actually like. Next.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Throwback Thursday, 1983. This is on this date the A-Team debuted. We're doing some television programs from the 80s as we celebrate Throwback Thursday. These are always my fun Throwback Thursdays. We do some sports. We've done some serious ones, some that we really wanted to, you know, talk about in the history of sports and the history of anything. But every now and then we do a little pop culture, and I always enjoy it.
Yeah.
Magnum P.I., Tom Selleck. On Throwback Thursday.
Has to die with a mustache on.
Absolutely. Like, absolutely.
There was that one season when he was on Friends and he didn't have a mustache and didn't like it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's not a lot of people who can wear a mustache well, but he is one of them.
That's right. That's right. That was filmed in Hawaii.
Yep.
Right? So, Tom Selleck. That's one of those shows I didn't watch when I was a kid.
What a bad gig that had to be, right?
I know. When they tell you what television shows in Hawaii, that sign. Don't care what it is. Go.
I remember
You to hang out there for a while.
I remember I was watching, I can't remember which actor it was. They were talking about Lost.
Yeah.
They had a film in Hawaii. I think it was the main, Matthew Fox. I think it was. They were talking to him, and he's like, yeah, it's like, you know, I auditioned for the show, and then they told me afterwards that I got the part and that the show was going to be entirely filmed in Hawaii. He's like, I couldn't see the downside.
Yeah, right. You're probably just excited that you got a TV show, right?
He had no idea. I mean, the show is confusing. Didn't really know the concept. Just knew he had a pilot to shoot in Hawaii, and he was like, "This could be all right."
There you go. Tom Selleck still on TV, right? Doesn't he still have a show?
Yeah,
Blue Bloods on CBS. So,
and now he's pretty remarkable. The only problem I don't like is I think he started to do those reverse mortgage ads.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's usually reserved for the old guys.
You're that's like, oh, really,
no, no, no,
yeah.
Come on,
yeah.
You're not there yet, Tommy.
Hey, not there yet. It's amazing, because we're talking about TV shows that are almost 40 years old.
Yeah, I know.
And he's still doing television. That's great. Good for him.
A lot of these guys are.
Yeah, David Hasselhoff is still a legit star.
Yeah.
Legit fun star, right? What's Mr. T doing these days? Nothing? Is he doing anything? Nothing,
but he's still rocking the mohawk, though, isn't he?
I think he is. Every now and then he makes an appearance. Yeah. They still drag him out for like fun endorsement things or like Mr. T, here he is. What's he doing? That kind of thing. But yeah, Mr. T could still, you would still pay money to like go to a convention for anything with Mr. T and a bunch of other.
Of course.
You know, so he could still make money on that circuit, if you will. All right. So did you hear that Major League Baseball this spring is going to be trying out the Robo Ump?
Yes.
Now, it's kind of confusing because I saw the story and I went, oh, good. They'll try it in spring training and maybe they'll use it eventually down the road. Not immediately, but they'll at least get some thoughts on it from the umpires and things like that. And I thought this would be kind of cool, but it says they're going to test it, but they're still going to make the umpires call the balls and strikes and use it as they're going to know what the call is, but they still can override it or something like that. They're not going full robot umpire on the balls and strikes. I think that's what it means, but I'm not 100% sure. Look, I think the technology for this has to be implemented at some point. I like this idea. I know the human element plays a part, and we have problems with instant replay. We have a problem with the slowdown of the game when basketball, we pause basketball to determine how much of the shot clock was left before it was released. Those are kind of cool things, but it does slow the game up a little bit. In this case, this might be something that speeds the game up. We'll now know for sure whether something is a ball or a strike. It can be programmed for every batter. The strike zone can be programmed for every batter. But if I'm an umpire, I'm a little nervous. I want to be able to have some control of that portion of home plate. that I don't necessarily – like, obviously, I'll be there when a guy slides. Obviously, I'll be there when there's a check swing. Obviously, I'll be there for any other calls that I need to make from the home plate. But I don't know if my job description, I wanted to say, and just listen to the feed and make a decision. And by the way, still pay attention, because if that feed goes out at any point, you're going to be responsible for making the call. That's a lot to do. Like, if you're sitting there for 9 innings, in the first 7 innings, it's you just going, ball, ball, strike, strike, ball, strike. Oh, I'm sorry, ball. I'm sorry, my mirror piece is busted. Strike, ball. I mean, I don't know. I'm all confused. Hold on 1 second. Was that a... All right. If you were doing that, it really is hard to get your brain to be like, no. Pay attention constantly so you know what the call is before you hear it from your earpiece. You would just get complacent. You'd just be behind there just listening for the earpiece. And then if it went out, you'd be like, Leslie Nielsen. You'd be like, ball? I think, right?
And the crowd cheers. So you and the start crowd cheers. More.
And you're like, all right, yeah. Because that's the way it would be. I think it would take a lot of mental strength to concentrate on something and not use that thing. But I also think it would be weird to see a strike, like whatever strike you are, like whatever strike you count as a strike as an umpire. You're like, that's a strike. And then they go, ball. And you're like, no, that's not a ball. That's a strike. And just go, strike, I don't care, fire me. But I like this idea. I've seen this in action. I've seen the Real Sports documentary they did on it. I was impressed. I mean, I got the thing lasered in. And no more of this umpire going, well, I have my own strike zone. No, you don't. You have the strike zone that's the strike zone in the rule book. You don't have your own. There's no such thing as your own strike zone. Well, I don't call anything around the knees. Well, you better, because that's the strike zone. All right, whatever it is. So I like this idea. I just think the umpire union might be a little too strong, and we may not really see it implemented anytime soon. Because I'd be nervous if I was an ump. Especially if I really was a good home plate ump. I'm like, computer technology is going to just take over. But I've seen it. I've seen the documentary on it. The game went faster. The pitchers liked it because the pitchers got an idea of what exactly, you know, they knew that it was a real strike zone. They weren't messing around with trying to figure out what this guy does call as a strike and what this guy will call as a ball. Like, if I paint the corner, does it call it as a ball? Well, okay, I can't paint that corner anymore. If I throw it low and inside into what I think is still the strike zone and he calls it a ball, well, I don't have that pitch to use. But when they use the real strike zone, they're noticing that, that works now. What I think is a strike zone is the real strike zone, and the computer is going to, you know, make that point. But you ever notice how sports, we've got all these things now that are just instantaneous in terms of results? Like, you ever watch the PGA Tour when the guy's on the tee box? They're telling you instantly that his ball is going a certain amount high. It's the ball's got a certain spin. It's going this distance.
My favorite is tennis.
Yeah, tennis now.
When they try to figure out, did it land outside or inside that line? I mean, it's all computer technology, and everyone's just like, that's it.
How?
No one debates it. It's just like, this is, why aren't we using this in other sports?
How is that technology? Do they have machines, lasers that are going down the lines?
I really have no idea. All I know is somebody will challenge, and then a computer graphic pops up. And they can zoom in on the spot, like, look at the shaded area just nicked that white line, so that means it's in. It's like, oh my God, that's amazing. Soccer started doing it. To determine whether the entire ball, for a goal to be scored, the entire ball has to cross the line.
See, I'm for this.
So they've instituted VAR. And all it is, I mean, every time that happens, the ref will... You know, when a goal is scored, and if it's contentious in any way, the ref will blow the whistle. He'll put his hands above his head and let people know, and then he makes a square, with his fingers to let everyone know that I'm going to go check the TV real quick, or I'm going to check the replay to see if that ball actually did cross the entire line.
It's funny that you bring up tennis, because yesterday afternoon I was home and I was just flipping through the dials and I saw the Australian Open was on. Yep. And I was like, let's see what that is. And I'm not a huge tennis guy. I want to make this very clear. I don't watch a ton of tennis, but I'll watch the majors. And if it's on in the afternoon and Serena's playing like she was when I turned it on, and John McEnroe and Chris Everett were the commentators, but they didn't have a play-by-play person. It was just those two.
Okay.
Talking about Serena. So Serena, there's a play. They call the ball in. Serena challenges it. They go to that video that you talked about where they show where the ball actually landed. And I kid you not, the ball, they called it in. The ball is an inch out, and McEnroe loses it on the broadcast. It was so funny. He goes, "That was way out. What are they thinking? What are they looking at?"
Oh,
and Chris Everett's giving him a little bit of a hard time. And she says, "You know, Joe, you still got it. You were my father's favorite player." You know, all this. And they started talking about because he got kicked out of the Australian Open 30 years ago for yelling, because he thought he had a certain amount of, you get warnings. And so what he did was he threw his racket, broke his racket, said some things. This was like in 1990. And he thought he had a certain amount of warning, so he was strategically pushing his limit. And he didn't realize that they had changed a rule or something. And the last warning he thought he could get was the one that disqualified him from the match. And so he didn't realize he was going to get disqualified.
We need someone like him back in tennis.
No kidding, right? He was great.
Somebody like him could make tennis popular again. In the United States, anyways.
And here's the thing about him when listening to him yesterday. And I watched the last, God, what is it, game? Is that what it is? The game. Serena won in two sets. So it was the last set. So I watched the last set. And John McEnroe is the best tennis commentator on television by a mile. He is so great at that. And the reason that he's great at it, and I always said this, I don't care what, I may not like your sport. And I may not follow your sport, but if you're passionate about it and can deliver that information and that passionate information that you have, and you can deliver that so I'll understand it and I'll get it, I will respect that and really appreciate it. I'm not a huge tennis guy, but McEnroe is a huge tennis guy. He loves the sport. He loves the game. And the way he talked about Serena, the way she plants her feet, the way her opponent, who I don't remember, struggled on but is really developing into a strong young player. She'll remember these moments playing Serena on the big stage. She's got a good career in front of her because she does this well and that well. She's just going to develop as the year goes by, as the years come by. The way he talked about it, he really conveyed a different side of the sport. He's excellent. He was excellent at it. And so, but you brought up the technology. You're right. I don't know how they do that so quick. That ball lands in and they go, boom, here it is. Oh no, it's out. Or boom, it just nicked the line. And I go, how do they know the computer's right?
No, exactly.
What are they doing?
But what the greatest thing about it, all the players are like, you know what? You know, maybe they're in the back of their mind. They're going, sometimes it works for me. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
But they're all on board with it. Like, you know what? I'll get the call next time. And that, I think we need to have that attitude in baseball.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, if we're going to complain about strikes and balls, especially when you have, you know, sorry to name you, Angel Hernandez, behind the plate, who, I mean, the ball can come right down the middle and he's, you know, you know it's a strike and he's like, ball. You know, that's when he does. I mean, I look at that going, that's the best Leslie Nielsen impression I've ever seen.
That's exactly right.
Because the ball literally was coming down the middle of the plate and you still saw it as a ball.
Yep. But a computer will go, no.
But a computer can go
in the center of the strike zone.
Yeah.
So he should have swung and slammed it out of the park. So again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It is a Throwback Thursday today, celebrating 1983, the debut of the A-Team. How fun is that? It is SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Again, Eli Manning announcing his retirement. That is coming up on Friday. SB Nation Radio.
All you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Dukes of Hazzard, 1983, we're going Throwback Thursday. A-Team debuted on this date in 1983, but we're celebrating the television that was. Probably before everybody got cable and there was 1,000 channels and everybody was watching something different every night.
Before people started streaming.
That's right.
Now we can stream these shows. Which is kind of, you know what? That's, I guess, a positive to streaming, right?
Yeah, that's right. Now you can go back in time and relive the good old days, like the Dukes of Hazzard, with
show that was.
Tom Wopat and John Schneider and Uncle Jesse.
Hated when they brought in the Cousins.
Yeah, the Cousins. Yeah, that was weak.
Just trying to jump in the shark. A dream like that. Nah, stop it, guys.
Wasn't that the whole premise of that show, that Uncle Jesse was making moonshine and they were just driving around a fast car through the Georgia hills?
No, I mean, it's funny when you talk about that show, because it was always about, you know, the Duke boys busting the real bad guys.
Right, right.
But the underlying theme to the entire show was that, yeah, they were just moonshine runners.
That's all they were.
That was it. They were running moonshine to some place and found, you know, oh, there's some nefarious thing going on over there. Let's
solve it. And the cops were legitimately trying to capture a speeding car through country roads. Like, let's not pretend like the cops were some sort of evil boss hog arm that was, they were like, that, there it is, the General Lee speeding through these residential roads in the backwoods of Georgia. We can't have that.
Sometimes they weren't even on roads.
That's right.
There was just some like dirt path they were driving on.
What's Catherine Bach doing these days? What's Daisy Duke doing?
I don't know.
No? God, she was beautiful.
She was. It was the shorts.
It was the shorts, but she was, you know, she was great. And wasn't, I can't remember. Somebody was, I think it was the actor who played Roscoe. He was like a trained theater actor. No. I'm sorry. It was Boss Hogg. Boss Hogg was like a trained theater actor. He was like in Shakespeare and things like that. He took the role as like a, yeah, all right, this is be out of the normal. I'll do this. Dukes of Hazzard, 1983. God, that's 37 years ago, that show. All right, coming up next, Major League Baseball says it will not do something, and there's a good rivalry returning to college basketball.